Well, he was perhaps one of the most gallant characters in the Bible. He was a leader. He was faithful to God. He was one of the greatest leaders Israel ever had, both a military leader and a statesman. And as far as we can see in the scripture, he suffered no scandal. There were no moral failures, no immorality. No rebellion ever scarred his life. Faithful to God all the way to the day of his death. He was both excellent as a military leader and as a statesman. Both positions he excelled, as few men before him ever did. His name was Hosea. Hosea. But there's a book named after him because he had his name changed. That book in the Bible is called Joshua. Joshua obtained his greatest successes and most lasting fame as a military leader. He led Israel into the great victories over the Amalekites and over the Amorites on the east of Jordan. After Moses died, Joshua did the work he is most noted for, namely conquering Canaan. It was a great and magnificent work, and the study of it takes up a major portion of the very book named for him, the book of Joshua, how he went in and he had to defeat this group and that group and that group and went on through. It appeared that Joshua believed in winning wars. For him, there was no substitute for victory. Few generals, if any, ever had led a nation's army as successfully as Joshua led Israel's. As a statement, Joshua had, as a statesman rather, Joshua had the unenviable position of succeeding Moses. Can you imagine? Moses, the man of God, and here you come, Joshua. But he succeeded him well, and he governed Israel with great wisdom from the very start, from the very beginning of his governing. His governing skill is very much evident when you see what he did with the tribes after they went in and conquered the land of Canaan. He had to take the tribes and divide the land among the tribes. And he had to solve various problems that the tribes had in possessing the land. Joshua did not govern with votes like most politicians. His speeches were not couched with ambiguous terms aimed at gaining popularity. He just was straightforward. He said what he needed. So I think the study and the lessons learned from this man will be most inspiring. Joshua demonstrates, his life demonstrates that we can live victoriously in this wicked world, and that we can overcome the enemy, though the enemy at times may seem almost invincible. Joshua's life gives us the key to victory and the key to our relationship with God. We'll talk about his character, talk about him as a servant. You know, the very first, you know, all of a sudden you see his book and the book named for him, you know, the book of Joshua. And what do you see? On the very first verse, Joshua 1, verse 1, what does it say? Now, I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Eternal, okay, the servant of the Eternal, that the Eternal spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, and then you read on what he said. So all of a sudden, it just appears. After the death of Moses, Joshua, the son of Nun, appears. Now, what is the very first thing it talks about? He's the son of a man by the name of Nun. I think in King James in Chronicles chapter 7, verse 27, it says the word known, N-O, uses the word O in place of you. He is called the son of Nun 30 times. The son of Nun. Now, because of Joshua's great character, because of his accomplishments, because of his deeds, because of his righteousness, because of his honor, look what he brought to his father. 30 times, when they mention Joshua, they mention his father, son of Nun. Okay? And look at this. A guy who loved God, a guy who was devoted to God, a guy who came back with a good report from the land. You remember when all the other people were saying, Joshua and Caleb came back and said, no, the land is great. Let's go in and take it. God will be with us. All the rest of them said, no, no. Oh, they brought back up, those people are really big. Those people are really strong. I don't see how we can do it. Even with God's help, they couldn't see it. But Joshua and Caleb had faith. They said, let's go take it. God gave it to us. God brought us here. Let's do it. So he had great character. He brought his father wonderful praise. You know, it's a, when you're the parent of a son that's really outstanding, or a daughter that's really wonderful person, I mean, you just get praise. You just, it's just a honor for you all the time. 30 times in the Bible, he's called the son of Nun. Now, there's another son, like Joshua. His name began with a J, and he's the son of N, another man. His name began with a J. He's the son of his father, whose name begins with an N, just like, you know, Joshua, the son of Nun. This guy is J, the son of N. But unlike Joshua, he did not bring praise to his father. He brought disgrace abundantly and a memorial in Israel that was really bad. How many of you think you know who it is? J, the son of N. Well, here it is in 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 25. Now Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite. He also was an Ephraimite. You know, Joshua was an Ephraimite from the tribe of Ephraim, and Jeroboam was also from the tribe of Ephraim. But unlike Joshua, Jeroboam brought his father enormous disgrace, dishonor, a very bad reputation. Here's what it says. Then Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zeredah, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zeruah, so even a widow, also rebelled. He rebelled against the king. Now, this was the reason why he rebelled against the king. Solomon built a Milo, and so on. He goes on. Now, Joshua, the son of Nebat, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, rather, unlike Joshua, was a wicked man. His idea was to capture the Israel. Once the tribes broke apart and he took those 10 tribes, he was not going to want them to go back. So he changed the dates of the holy days. He changed God's law. He brought in. And after that, you know what you had? You have over and over again in 1 Kings chapter 16, in 2 Kings 3, and so on, in 2 Kings 10, and 2 Kings 13, and so on. You'll have, and this king followed in the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Remember that? And they condemned these kings who followed Jeroboam's way, leading Israel into more and more paganism, drifting away from God's law, drifting away from the eternal. Now, while Joshua, the son of Nun, that phrase is mentioned 30 times, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, is mentioned 21 times in the scripture. And many of those times specifically mentions Jeroboam because he caused Israel to sin. And that's the context in which Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, is mentioned. There are many sons, unfortunately, like Jeroboam. And you don't even want to be identified with a son like that. So bad, so weak, and so evil. But Joshua brought praise to his father. Joshua lived a noble life, and thus he is Nun, Mr. Nun, whoever he was honored to have that man as his son. How we honor our parents is a very important thing. And we honor our parents when we live an upright, moral, truthful, honest, courageous life. Those who disgrace their earthly parents will probably be of little use in God's work and to God himself. Now, Joshua had another name. You see, he started off, his name was not Joshua when he started off. In Deuteronomy, we see him as Joshua, but in Deuteronomy 32 and verse 44, the Bible says, Moses came and spoke all the words of this song in the ears of the people. He and Hoshea, the son of Nun. See that? This is Deuteronomy 32, verse 44. His name was Hoshea originally. Hoshea means salvation. Okay? So, salvation. Moses was the one who changed Joshua's name from Hoshea to Joshua, and you see it in Numbers 13, verse 16. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Jeshua. J-E-H-O-S. Now what happened is they dropped that O and it became the title of Joshua. Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. And that's fairly easy to do. Numbers 13, verse 16. And these are the names of the men whom Moses sent to investigate the land. And you'll see this is Numbers 13. I'm reading from the New English Translation. It's the same verse, different translation. And Moses gave Hoshea, the son of Nun, the name Joshua. Now, Joshua is, the original was J-E-H-O-S-H-U-A. It means, and it was abbreviated Joshua. The new name, the original name Hoshea, meant salvation. Joshua meant the eternal is salvation. Means Yah is salvation. Okay? To change the name, Moses simply did a prefix in front of Hoshea and spelled it Oshua. In other words, Hoshea was spelled Oshua, O-S-H-U-A, and all he did was put the word J-E-H, or J-H, Yah, for Yah. Yah, and that became Joshua. Now, it's very significant that the word Joshua is the same name that the Lord, that we call our Lord. It's his first name. He became Joshua, or Yeshua. And all you had to do is that you have the Hebrew word for Yeshua, Joshua. When they translated that word into Greek, it became Yesu, Jesus. And when they transliterated the word Yesu into English, it became Jesus. A very common name. People today name their kids Joshua. Hey, Josh, I have a nephew whose name is Josh. They call him Josh, but it was Joshua. And so a lot of people are named Joshua. Almost nobody uses the word Jesus who are people who are anglicized, but the Hispanics will often use Jesus, and that's the name they call Jesus, Jesus, and they name their kid Jesus. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not a name that is so sacred it can't be used on ordinary people. It was Joshua, an ordinary person in a sense, but did extraordinary things. So Joshua's bearing the name of the great Redeemer, conquering evils of life. That's what Jesus Christ came to do, conquer the evils of life. Jesus Christ brought redemption. So the significant, there seems to be a significance in the birth order here. In the book of 1 Chronicles, chapter 7 and verse 27, it appears here that Joshua was the firstborn of his family, firstborn of his parents. It's sort of cryptic, but if you read it, First Chronicles chapter 7, dropping down to verse 27, it says this, talking about all these people. Laden, his son Amahud, his son Elisha, his son, and verse 27, Nun, his son, and it spells it N-O-N, Nun, his son, Joshua, his son. So when they naming the sons, you don't name the third or fourth born, you usually name the firstborn. So it appears that Joshua himself was a firstborn of his father and mother. Okay, firstborn. What did that mean? Guess where Joshua was on the night of that first Passover that God said. He was in Egypt. Guess what his family had to do. They had to kill that lamb as Moses won. You know, every family had to kill that lamb. Every family had to take a hyssop, and like a sponge, and do the whole doorway of their house. Put that blood over the doorway to what? To protect the firstborn. And who was one of the firstborn in his house? Joshua himself. Joshua was protected by the blood of the lamb the night of the Passover, as Moses, before he became Moses' successor. So he knew he was there. He knew he owed his life to the very blood of the lamb itself. Now Joshua was born in Egypt. Okay, born in Egypt. When what was happening to all the Israelites? They were made slaves of the Egyptians, and they had to work, and they had to make the bricks, and they had to do the mortar, and they had to do this, and they were being cruelly whipped and so on. So Joshua knew the crack of the whip of the taskmaster. He knew whether he was a little boy from the time he was a kid, or his parents did. He knew what it was like to be in slavery. He knew what it was like to not have the freedom. He knew what it was like as a young man. And he became a man as they came out of the land of Egypt. And he became one of the leaders, you know, as they was going with Moses. He was a young man. He was a kid in Egypt because, you know, they all the ones over there except for Joshua and Caleb. Okay, so tough times, he realized. And you know, tough times. In slavery, many of the Israelites had to just buckle up and endure. And African-American people who had been slaves in our country have survived by the grit of their determination that they were not going to go down. And they have survived that slavery. Many of them have overcome enormous odds. And there are many, many multimillionaires who are African-American in this country, haven't overcome prejudice, haven't overcome the past of the slavery. They have done very well, many of them. Now, many of them have not. And I'm sure many of the Israelites did not do well, but Joshua did. So there were dark days of the Depression. There's dark days in every generation, there are dark days, bad days, tough days, depression, dust bowl, problems, war, prejudice, this, that, other things that affect us. But it seems that people do better under difficult, trying, and hard circumstances than they do when there's just a life of luxury. Just sit back, everything's good. Sit back and enjoy life, you know, have another drink, have another piece of pie, and I'm just going to enjoy life. It's just fine, you know. You know, that makes people soft. It makes people not have to dig in hard work. They never have to reach up. There was an old poem that goes like this, you know, the trees in the forest. If you have to fight to get up to that light, you have to grow up. And you're trying, you don't want to be in the shade of other trees. You have to fight to get up to the top. And so trees do. People do. People survive. Joshua rose from slavery to be a great conqueror of the land of Canaan. So if we expect to amount to anything for God and conquer the evils ourselves that we face in life, we will have to have a faith that can endure hardship. You have to have a faith. I'm going to survive. I'm going to do well. I'm going to overcome this this adversity. You have to have it. The first appearance of Joshua in the Bible is about Joshua as a soldier. It had to do with Israel's war with Amalek near Mount Sinai. When Israel arrived at this area near Sinai, Mount Sinai, a few months after the exodus of Egypt, the Amalekites attacked the Israelites there. Moses then appointed Joshua as Israel's military leader to conduct the war against the Amalekites. And this is what we read in Exodus chapter 17, verse 9. And Moses said to Joshua, "Choose us out men and go out and fight with Amalek." You see that? Exodus chapter 17. There's a little bit more I'm going to read from that chapter. He says, "You choose them, and I'm going to stay here." This is Moses. "I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to lift my arms." Okay? Let's take a look at this. Exodus chapter 17. Amalek came out and fought against Israel at Rephidim. And so Moses said to Joshua, "Choose out for us and go out and fight Amalek tomorrow. I will station myself on the top of this hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought against Amalek. And Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Now all Moses up here. Now think about this. You appoint somebody. I want you to pick out some men and you go and fight. I want you to get this done. I want you to fight Amalek. Okay? Here's the first time then. Moses would certainly not appoint Joshua to head the military if he had no experience whatsoever. The man must have had some kind of fighting experience somewhere. Maybe he learned it in Egypt, maybe he learned it somewhere else. But he was a man who could organize, he was a man who could pick out good people, he was a man who knew where to go to get the job done, and Moses just turned it over to him. "I'm going to go up and stand on the hill." "Oh yeah, thanks Moses, I'm glad you're rooting for us." "Cheer loud, come on guys." And Moses had this staff. Now he's symbolically going to stand up there, but who's down on the ground fighting? Joshua and the men that were with him, okay? So Moses, you know, points him to the job. Now it's possible that Joshua, you know, did some military things in Egypt, we don't know. Sometimes foreigners, they say, analyst says foreigners were sometimes common in the armies of Egypt, but we don't know where he got his training. We don't know if he did get training. We just know that Moses had confidence in him and asked him, defeat the Amalekites, defeat them. So in verse 10, so Joshua, this is now dropping down. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. In verse 11, it came to pass that when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were growing heavy. Now, I don't know if you've ever done this. You know, would you do it as a kid? Did you ever do this? Just hold your arms out like this. Just hold your arms. See how long you can hold your arms out. Now, you could probably do it a minute, 2 minutes. And then after a while, you'll start, your hands, your arms and muscles start to shiver because the nerves and the muscles just holding those arms out or just holding your hands high, you get tired. You get very tired. Those rotator cuffs and the shoulder muscles just get tired, the weight of the arms. So they went ahead and fought. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and they put it under him. "Here, put your hand on the stone, keep your hand up." And he said, well, he had to sit down on it, he was standing on. And then Aaron supported, "Let me hold your hands up." You know, "Well, let me hold your hands up for you. Moses, you got to keep your hands in the air." He said, "Oh, my hands are wanting to fall down, I can't hardly do it." So Aaron and Hur came up and they tried to help him and Hurt supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the others. Let me help you hold your hands up. Thus his hands were steady until the sun set. So Joshua overwhelmed Amalek. See that in verse 13? And his people with the edge of the sword. Joshua overwhelmed Amalek. Then the Eternal said to Moses, write this in the book and the memorial and recite it to Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Moses built an altar there and named it, the Eternal is my banner. And he said, the Eternal has sworn, the Eternal will have war against Amalek from generation to generation. He's going to blot out, wants to blot out the name of Amalek who attacked Israel there. So you see what Joshua did. He must have been a very good strategist. He must have known how to motivate. The King James in verse 13 uses this phrase, so Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. The ability to discern people is a very valuable ability. Not just in selecting soldiers, as in Joshua's case, but in almost every walk of life. Selecting right people, selecting the good people, selecting people who have a heart, selecting people who are brave. Selecting the people is a very important quality. And Joshua, as a soldier, we could say was a prompt soldier. Okay? He sprung to life real quick. Notice in verse 10, when Moses asked him to do it, in verse 9, Joshua did as Moses told him. Okay? He was right there. Perhaps that's one of the most important qualities about Joshua that we learn from the scriptures, that he knew what to do and he obeyed immediately. He didn't say, well, let me think about this. You know, I don't know if I could do this, Moses. Well, how many people you want me to take? Well, who would you take? You know what that's called when you're right? When your boss gives you the order and you say, well, I don't know. What would you do? How would you handle this? That's called delegating up. You're delegating up to the boss. You're delegating up, having them do the job, having them create the decision, having them make all the things. That's delegating up. When Moses asked Joshua to do it, what did he do? Joshua did as Moses had said to him in verse 10. He just did as Moses told him. Okay? His obedience then was prompt. Okay? He was right on the ball. That's true obedience. Anything less, in a sense, is a lot of delinquency, you know? You know, as a kid, did you ever do this as a kid? Your dad gives you a thing. I want you guys to clean out that barn or clean out that garage or mow that lawn. Okay. And you wait, and 2 hours go by, and then somebody says, I told you to clean out the window. When are you going to? Oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. You know, you're always going to do it. You ever have people who are always going to do it? They never do it, but they're always going to do it. They never get around to it. And one year, a man came up to me, and he had a little circle paper like this. It was a round piece of paper, and on the words written on the round paper was, to it. And he handed it to me, and he said, here. I said, what's this? He said, it's a round to it. So all the things you ever said you'd do when you get around to it, now you have the round to it, so you can get to them now. But Joshua got right on to it. He got right to it. He didn't have get around to it. He got right to it. He was prompt in his obedience. Obedience is important. Obedience is important in life. It illustrates something. You know, you got to do something, you got to do it when you're asked to do it. As a result of his win, Joshua was promoted. And in a sense, in Exodus verse 14 here, in Exodus 7, the Eternal said to Moses, write in a book a memorial. Write this memorial and recited to Joshua that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. You write this, Joshua was so successful in his military career that his success then caused, in a sense, a promotion for him. The fact that God ordered Moses to review this with this Amalek war with Joshua is plain of his hint that Joshua's future was going to be uplifted, promoted. While neither Moses nor Joshua realized at the time that this order came from God, it was given before Joshua would replace Moses. We can still see what prompted this order. Joshua did a faithful job as the appointed military leader in this battle with Amalek, so God began to promote him to higher office. He was going to be the successor to Moses as a result of this tremendous battle and the result of his prompt and direct and successful obedience to God. If we are faithful in that which is what? Least, we can be faithful in that which is greater, right? And a person doesn't do the job they asked to do here, you're probably not going to count on them. I'm waiting for the big job. Oh, yeah, I don't want to do this job. I'm waiting for the really big. Give me the big job. I'll do the big job. I don't do these little jobs. Now, well, that's not the way it usually works. There's an interesting thing about Joshua 1 and verse 1. Notice what he's called. Joshua 1, verse 1. Now, it came about after the death of Moses, who was the servant of the Eternal, that the Eternal spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant. Moses' servant. What was Joshua to Moses? He was Moses' servant. And he's called that in the book of Exodus, chapter 24 and verse 13. So Moses arose with Joshua, his servant. And Moses went up to the mountain of God. You remember when Moses was going up to the mountain of God? God called him, said, you come on up here. I'm going to give you the ten. That's when he received the Ten Commandments. You remember he was up on the mountain for, quote, 40 days and 40 nights. And some people think that doesn't literally mean 40 days, 40 nights. It's just a Hebrew expression. It means a long time. But it's not literally 40 days and 40 nights. But he was up there a long time, whether it was 40 days or 40 nights or 20 days and 20 nights. Well, it doesn't matter. It was a long time. Now, there are other times that the same Hebrew word is used to describe Joshua, the Moses' servant. In reference to Joshua, it translates this word ministers. King James uses the word minister. He ministered to Moses. He was Moses' minister. The Hebrew word means to wait on somebody, to serve somebody, to minister to this person, to help them, to serve them, to be there. Another place in Scripture describes Joshua's servant position as he, in Deuteronomy 1, verse 38, as the person that stands before you. Joshua is the man who stands before you. That is a typical, you see it in Deuteronomy 1, verse 38. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall enter there. Encourage him, for he will cause Israel to inherit it. He stands before you. That phrase is, you know, when the king is on the throne or when the general is there, what do they stand? You stand before them. You're there ready to serve. You're ready. You're standing before them, ready to do what they're asked to do. The New English Translation puts it like this. However, Joshua, the son of Nun, your assistant, will go. They interpret the phrase stand before you in the New English Bible and just go right to this phrase. Joshua, the son of Nun, your assistant will go. Encourage him because he will enable Israel to inherit the land. So the same description is used by Elijah to express his servant relationship with God. Elijah says, the eternal before whom I stand. You read that in 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 1. Before whom I stand. You're standing before God. And as I'm his servant, I'm ready to do what God's will. I'm ready to act on behalf of God. It speaks of one's readiness to serve another. It says you're standing close and ready for orders. Joshua, just like Elisha, and you read this in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 21, was a servant to the man who he was going to succeed. Elisha was a servant to Elijah. Joshua was a servant to Moses, and they succeeded him. They succeeded those men. Joshua displayed some very important character traits. Very important character traits in his relationship with Moses and in his actions as Moses' servant. These traits are humility, honesty, holiness, and heroism. All these aspects of character are important credentials for his promotion to God's service in the conquering of Canaan and leading Israel into its promised land. The next time I speak, we'll talk about those character traits, evidenced in Joshua's very life and in the way he conducted himself. We're going to see how this man could be so humble, so humble. You know, it requires a lot of character to think about this. In Exodus chapter 17, Joshua was responsible for winning the war over the Amalekites, right? In Exodus 24, seven chapters later, he is called Joshua's servant. Moses arose with Joshua his servant and went up. Now here's Joshua who just, he had finished this great campaign and won against the Amalekites. Now he is Moses' servant as Moses goes up. You know, that'd be like saying General Eisenhower, who won that war, you know, helped win led the armed forces in the European campaign, now comes and he is so-and-so's servant. He's now going to, you know, you need something, I'll get it for you, you know. Yeah, that takes a lot of humility. I engineered, strategized, and won the war, with God's help, of course, they all did credit to God, against the Amalekites. And here I am now, humbling myself to be Moses' servant again. That takes a lot of humility. It takes character. It takes self-control. We'll talk more about Joshua in our next sermon.